Hey, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Thursday, January 14th, 2021. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, we're just trudging along, aren't we?
Good afternoon. I don't even know if that's the right way that we're doing this. Trudging along, I'll tell you, we're kind of, I don't know what you want to call for the beginning of this year, but I think it's going to be, it's going to be a whole lot different than 2020, but I think it's going to be just as painful, but it's going to be a different type of a pain. And it's going to be just as difficult, but a different type of a difficult. So if that makes sense to anyone, and it does to you, right, Dave?
I need to think about it a little bit more. It's certainly going to be a good year for gold.
Absolutely.
We'll talk about in the third segment. Wish I had a better idea of just how good it's going to be. We never do, but as we'll note, if you're not already in and you don't get in now, boy, I think you're going to miss some terrific opportunities along the way, Melody.
And absolutely. And that'll be the good thing. But in order for gold to get to those much higher prices that we expect it to, we're going to have some financial pain in this country. So 2020, we had the COVID pain. This year, I believe we're going to have financial pain. So that is what I meant, different pains for different years, but both a pain. So one just as bad as the other. One could actually be worse than the other. But gold today, let's talk about something good today. Gold is up $3.20 today in the New York spot price aftermarket, $1,848. Silver's up 34 pennies today at $25.62. Platinum is up 24 at $1,124. Palladium is up 16 at $2,446. See what the dollar did today, down 0.14 at 90.18. Crude oil was up 75 cents. It's really, truly interesting to see crude oil pushing up to these numbers, almost $54, 53.66. The paper markets today, the Dow was up 51 points at 31,112. Oh, I'm sorry, they just reversed it. Well, why do they do this to me? But they do, Dave. They show the Dow down 69 points at 30,991. The NASDAQ was down 16, 13,112. The S&P was down 14 at 3,795. I'll go back in a little bit, see if they change them anymore. 10-year yield, 1.13%. 1.13%, up 0.04. And everything was higher in Europe and Asia. Everything is, I don't know what people are so happy about. I guess if you believe what everyone's telling you on the good side, I guess you would be happy, right? So, first-time jobless claims jumped to 965,000 last week. But these people aren't very happy. And, of course, it's another sign of a slowdown in hiring due to pandemic restrictions. The total was worse than Wall Street had estimated of 800,000. And was 179,000 or 23% higher than the previous week. Markets, again, no reaction to the number. As a continuing decline in economic activity is expected to be met with, you know, we know we're going to talk about, you know, the more stimulus from the next administration. Future prices continue to indicate fractional opening gains on Wall Street. Still, the jobless number for the week ending January 9th is just another sign of economic turmoil. The total was the highest since the week of August 22nd, when just over 1 million claims were filed. Continuing unemployment claims, they were also higher, rising 199,000 to almost 5.3 million. Now, the continuing claim figure does run about a week behind the weekly claims total and increased for the first time since late November. I don't know, Dave. Doesn't seem good news.
Certainly not. We know that a decrease in total number of government people receiving total government jobless numbers fell about 800,000, but that came mainly from a slide in people filing for emergency pandemic claims, though the net 18.5 million figure remains over eight times more than the 2.2 million total people receiving benefits last year at this time. The increase in claims was spread across just a handful of states, mostly those with more stringent restrictions on businesses there. In Illinois, where Chicago has clamped down on restaurants, saw a jump of over 51,000. And other big gainers included California, which doesn't even allow outdoor dining anymore, and saw its claims rise by over 20,000. New York State rose by 15,500. However, several states with relatively loose restrictions also saw noticeable jobless gains. Florida saw its claims more than double to almost 51,000, while Texas saw a 14,000 increase. Now, signs have been building lately that the job gains that began in May have certainly cooled off in December. Non-farm payrolls declined for the first time since the pandemic market lows, falling by 140,000. At the same time, the government's grossly underreported headline unemployment rate held steady at 6.7%. As they say in California, Melody, gag me with a spoon. The actual rate is probably closer to 26%. Now, yesterday, the Fed said that business contacts throughout its 12 districts reported a reduction in hiring and difficulty in filling positions. No surprises there.
You know, Dave, if the actual rate is closer to 26%, I mean, for the non-believers, if you would just cut it in half.
Well, there you go.
I mean, you're still looking at 13%.
No, that at least gets you closer to the government's U6 rate.
Exactly.
Short-term discouraged workers.
Yeah, and so it just goes to show you, I mean, it's still bad.
Yeah.
I personally believe we're closer to the 26.
Yeah, and it's nowhere close, nowhere close to the official, quote, full employment figure that's one of the Fed's two primary goals. So, yeah, it almost raises it to the level of a joke, and no one talks about it. No one mentions that number. It's just a big ruse, and it's all part of a feel-good scenario.
And they've been doing it for a long time.
Yep. Both sides, all administrations.
You know, I think they started changing. I can't remember the year that they changed not reporting the U6 anymore, where they changed it to make things look better.
Yeah, well, it's been a long time now.
I mean, I don't know if it was the mid-90s or I don't know if it was that long, but.
Yeah, I think it might have even been earlier than that. They just stopped counting. Maybe it was the 90s for unemployment. It was 1980 for CPI that they changed. They no longer count the long-term discouraged worker who stopped working. I mean, go figure.
And it really is the same with inflation. You know, it's inflation is higher. You know, and they just distort. Same way with the GDP readings and everything else. Everything has changed, and the equations are adapted so they get the answers or the outcomes that they want. So it's, as you're right, it's that good feeling, keep those markets going, and...
Yeah, you know, I can go along with the fact that and accept that, you know, estimating these mega numbers, you know, whether GDP, unemployment, inflation, what have you, is an inexact science. But come on, it's got to bear some semblance of reality. And too often anymore, it just doesn't. And for decades, with inflation and unemployment, and their changes in how they come up with the numbers, the more time goes on, the farther off it is, and they understate. That's the problem. I mean, it wouldn't be any better if they overstated it by this large amount, but particularly because it's understating so much the degree of pain and the degree of risk that our people and markets are facing.
You know, and you're right, it is the degree. And, you know, what are we willing to accept a percentage of error for common, you know, fluctuations?
Yeah.
And, you know, it can fluctuate a little bit and so forth. And, you know, there is a degree of error and everything like that. But you're right, it's the degree when we're talking about a 26% unemployment rate versus a 6.7%. And even when it was down to 3%, how low did we go? 2 point something, I think, at one time. But
yeah.
3%? I mean, come on. We knew it was our unemployment rate. It was still up there around 10 or more, 12.
Yeah.
So maybe even – so, yeah, I mean, it is. And that's it's a disgrace because it truly only helps those – the multinational corporations and everybody else, but the little guy out there who's trying to make a living and a buck, make investments and trying to understand how things work and to do right, it's no help to him whatsoever. That's what I have a problem with.
Yeah.
And they're just being misled. And I'll tell you what, I mean, and again, no, when we were at those low unemployment rates, and you tried to tell somebody, well, that's not the real number, and they were a pro-administration, you couldn't tell them otherwise. You could give them all the stats that you could find. Half of them don't believe we went into a recession in February. Oh, we had a great economy until COVID hit. Well, no, that's not true. And here's the numbers. This is what was happening at that time. But nobody was talking about it. So this was all pre-COVID that we were beginning, and the cracks were beginning to appear. So remember the billions and billions of dollars that were being fed into the repo market starting back in September? That was September of 2019. That was just supposed to have been a week bailout. And then it turned into a couple of weeks, then it turned into a couple of months, and here we are heading into 2021 and they're still doing it. So yeah, this is, you know, it's been great, and it has nothing to do with COVID, and that's what people have a hard time understanding. Medium and long term interest rates, they're beginning to creep higher. And, you know, everyone is talking about the stock market now is beginning to look like a bubble. market participants were keeping an eye on Jerome Powell and other Fed officials. They talked today. The broad uncertainty created by the pandemic, volatility in financial markets, and global politics and questions about the future of monetary policy from Fed policymakers, you know, have investors, you know, they're trying to find some sort of guidance. Well, they ought to find, they shouldn't be looking to these people for guidance. You should be doing your own research. Minutes from the Fed's December Open Market Committee meeting and comments from some other members in recent days, we've talked about it here, saying that the Fed could begin to reduce its massive quantitative easing program by the end of the year. Really? Comments from other members, however, suggested that the Fed will be buying bonds for a much longer time. Philadelphia Fed President Patrick Harker said he could see a tamp down occurring at the very end of 2021 or early 2022. Atlantic Fed President said he was open to tapering bond buys later this year. Dallas Fed Chief, it might be this year, he hopes. On the other side, in an attempt to quiet all the tapering talk, Powell and two of his close heavy hitters made clear we're going to be here for a while. Now is not the time to be talking about exiting from ultra-easy policy and promise to give plenty of notice when the time came to do so. It's going to be a long time before they change their policies, Dave.
Well, yeah, indeed. I mean, Vice Chair Richard Clarita also said, this is today, like, Powell, we're not going to lift off until we get inflation at 2% a year. We're trying to tie our own hands. Ugh. Lyle Brainard echoed those sentiments, saying the economy remains far away from the Fed's goals. At least there's a bit of honesty. And as a result, the bond buying program will likely to continue for, quote, quite some time. Now, as we know, the Fed's currently buying $120 billion of U.S. Treasury bonds and mortgage-backed securities. And that's every month, in part to keep yields on government debt low. It's largely to do that and to prop up particularly big business. Even so, the 10-year Treasury yield has risen by nearly 25 basis points since the start of the year, although it is edging back down now, touching a high of 1.187 on Tuesday as investors are bracing for a pickup in inflation. Another important factor, Melody, the Fed's latest report on business conditions, as I mentioned, found that a third of the Fed's 12 districts reported flat or declining activity in the last 2 months of 2020. The others' activity increased only modestly.
Wow. Hey, folks, we're heading into a break right now. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit the website, dgscoins.com. Sign up for a weekly newsletter. And get your product while it's hot. 1 ounce Gold Eagles, getting a little tough. We have some coming in. We've got those to sell. Premiums are beginning to rise from wholesalers. We're trying to keep our prices the same as far as our commissions, but my prices have to rise when they raise their prices. And the overall price, I have to adjust it to theirs, but we keep our prices low. I do online comparison shopping. We're still right in there. We'll either match or beat anyone online, as long as it's a legitimate price. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And you know what? There was this one company online, you know, I know a lot of people bought their silver from, but I didn't know. I got the business from them because my prices were actually lower. I actually included shipping because it was in a couple of monster boxes. And he says, that's great. It really comes to my door? I says, yeah. He says, well, with this other company, which was online, he says, I have to go pick it up at the hub. I says, what? I mean, you can if you want. I mean, we can arrange it for you, but no, this will come to your home. So, you know, that's one of the differences, and I hadn't heard that before. This is the first time I've heard that, oh, they don't charge a shipping. Well, now I know why. I'd be shipping all day to the hubs, too, if you didn't, you know, make you go pick it up. So these are the little things that they don't advertise on their website. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. You know, we were talking about jobs. We're talking about interest rates. Talking about the Fed wants a 2% plus inflation rate. You know, that's just their gibberish. We all know it's higher. But then we're also talking about, you know, there's some people who have not gone back to work just for the fear of getting sick because of pre-existing conditions. And the one place, Smithfield Foods, which I think is now owned by Chinese, I'm not saying anything, I'm just saying. We had hundreds of workers there at the meatpacking plant in Nebraska that got sick at the height of the pandemic. For about 50 of the facility's 2,300 employees, they have this fear of getting sick because of pre-existing condition and has kept them from working ever since. While the surge in the number of unemployed Americans has been a focus of economists, another problem in the labor market has been mostly overlooked. The people that do have jobs are calling out sick in record numbers or taking leaves of absence. Unlike the jobless rate, which has declined by roughly 40-some percent from the peak in April, the rate of absenteeism has remained stubbornly high. More than 1.9 million people missed work in December because of illness. And that's according to the Labor Department data.
Yeah, that's surprising insofar as it matches nearly the 2 million records set last April. And it's just underscoring the impact of a third wave of infections coming. Now, these lost days of work are sapping an already downtrodden economy that's been progressing in fits and starts for the past several months. And until vaccinations start driving down this absenteeism, then, you know, the missed work is causing supply chain disruptions that are eventually going to show up in the data. And absenteeism have already been leading to some shortages, and it could lead to more, leading to higher prices and less output. The problem, Melody, is so acute that companies and industries ranging from meat packing to consumer packaged goods are now lobbying to get their workers near the front of the line for vaccinations. So there you have it, fear and loathing among some high-risk frontline employers. I mean, oh gosh, imagine. I wonder to what extent that's occurred in the medical field, in hospitals, and urgent care centers, because of that. We haven't, I haven't read anything about that. Maybe we'll look further and just follow up to see what other industries are being affected by that.
Well, you know, you mentioned a point in there about supply chain problems.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about this later on in the program, but I think now's a good time to bring it in, because that caught my attention.
Yeah.
And this is something that I've been talking about all year long, is the shock to the supply chains. And what we're seeing is a wider swath of the global economy and that is becoming more challenged. And it's threatening to stifle Asia's trade-led recovery, just as soaring freight rates make it harder for businesses to weather, you know, another year. Shortages of consumer goods like paper towels and work-from-home gear early in the crisis have given way to parts shortfalls in one of the most globally integrated of industries, auto manufacturing. Volkswagen was forced to cut production plans at the world's largest car factory in Germany and warned supply constraints might spread globally. At the same time, Honda's reducing output at 5 North American factories as it struggles to procure chips that are used to make cars. The supply side bottlenecks seem to be more pronounced in the U.S. and Europe, where supply delivery times are slowing again. Analysts say that that's negative for industrial production in the West and should also result in a sharper drawdown in inventories. And, of course, it's going to put upward pressure on output prices. Compounding the industrial imbalances are transport woes that's plaguing the consumer and healthcare sectors that's still dealing with a lack of available shipping containers to move these components and the finished products out of the Asian markets, China, Taiwan, South Korea, and some of these other Asian exporters, Dave.
Well, one shipping official, in fact, says the world needs the equivalent of 500,000 more 20-foot containers. That's roughly enough to fill 25 of the largest ships in operation out there, Melody,
wow,
to satisfy just the current demand. In the meantime, standard container rates on trans-Pacific routes are 4 times what they were just a year ago, and that's before equipment surcharges and premiums for guaranteed loading are added. Now, just a few weeks ago, the bottlenecks at ports from Singapore to L.A. And Rotterdam were looking like short-term headaches and added costs during peak season. But now, they're threatening to act more like a brake on any kind of global rebound. That's because these convulsions are reaching beyond supply chains into operations. And that, as Melody said, is curbing output, or they're saddling manufacturers with goods that haven't been paid for. And that's wreaking havoc on inventory and cash flows. And I'm sure making it quite a challenge at some of these ports for the longshoremen and longshorewomen whose job it is to manage the movement there. In some cases, these supply snarls are you know, causing demand drag. Some factories complain they can't even consider new orders until the clogged pipeline clears. And there's this real stark photograph. I'm not sure where it was, where I saw it, but satellite tracking shows almost three dozen container ships anchored waiting for berth space at the ports near L.A., Long Beach County. It's the busiest gateway for U.S. goods trades. And that's up from about 20 vessels right before Christmas. So they're just hanging right out there in the ocean, having a grand old time. Not unlike those cruise ships, Melody, who were stuck at port at the beginning of the pandemic. And I guess there's some various ports around the world that are in similar shape, albeit without hundreds of passengers.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah, I've heard some of these cruise lines aren't going to come back for years and years.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know how they last that long for years and years, but you know, we were talking about the supply chain and automakers, and they're suffering from the deepest sales decline in decades. And officials can quickly, you know, we've seen them, you know, I'm not sure. I kind of lost that, Dave.
Your thought. I wasn't sure where you were heading, but in any event, I agree.
And I actually said that on live radio. But that makes me human, because I think every listener out there probably had the same thing. But anyway, we have
us, ladies and gentlemen.
But I'm great with gold and silver. I never ever error there. That's a fact. So U.S. automakers, they're suffering from the deepest sales decline in decades. We have a country that's divided, and of course in the middle of a pandemic. But if officials can quickly roll out vaccines and stabilize the nation, automotive executives and analysts are hoping vehicles sales will return to some form of normalcy in 2021. I don't think those two things would have any impact on returning. And I know these are the executives and analysts, but I can't imagine, because it's really coming down to people having money. And I guess maybe if everyone feels and businesses reopen with the vaccines, that people will be working and have more money to do things. But on the other hand, let's not forget about all the businesses that have shuttered and won't be reopening. So, and I'm not quite sure, you know, what the country being politically divided is has anything to do with auto sales. Wouldn't have anything to do, you know, rates are low, you get free, you know, probably zero rate financing with most of your manufacturers, auto manufacturers. But Volkswagen America's CEO, Scott Key, says he's optimistic, as one could be, because he thinks that the core environment is there. But of course, what is weighing on everything is how quickly we can get the shots rolled out. Well, I don't know, Dave. I think this heading into a recession prior to COVID, bringing out the shots isn't going to make that much of a difference. That's my view. Industry executives and analysts predict a strong consumer demand will continue this year, and a return of commercial fleet sales as local officials distribute the vaccine. Everybody's working at home. How's the return of commercial fleet sales? You know, sure, you get the salesmen and stuff like that floating around, but you have more people working at home. You would think that would have more of a negative impact on that than anything. These are just questions, and just early forecasts for new vehicle sales this year range from 15 million to 16 million vehicles, which would be an increase of about 7% and 10% compared to 2020. We saw last year sales were down almost 15%. 15%.
Yeah, I mean, Pat Manzi, who's the chief economist of the National Automobile Dealers Association, NADA, says, you know, looking forward, we're optimistic about the continued recovery of the new light vehicle market, which looks to be driving the U.S. market in any event. Jessica Caldwell, who runs insights for auto research firm Edmunds, believes the current political environment won't have a lasting impact on auto sales this year. She says that in any event, January is historically the worst sales month of the year, and if there is a political fact, it won't be a big one. Toyota Motor and IHS Market have the most optimistic sales forecast so far, at 16 million, while Cox and LMC Automotive expect 15.7 mil. Other companies like General Motors are expected to release their sales forecasts for the year in the coming weeks.
Well, my question is, what about the millions and millions of people that are going to have to pay their rents come at the end of January?
Well, you raise an excellent question. Now, even if, you know, that moratorium's extended for four more months as envisioned, when a new administration comes in next week, there's still May or June or whenever a moratorium, by definition, can't last forever. And then the Pied Piper is going to be facing us with, I think, a big frown and open hands, saying it's time to pay people. And that is going to have, I think, a tremendous impact, certainly on the auto industry, certainly on restaurants and the other leisure industries, because you're right, it's going to be priority time more than ever, and people are going to want to have a place to lay their and their children's heads. Then they're going to worry about food, maybe not doubt about clothing either. They'll just have to wear what they've been wearing, except the younger kids, they outgrow them and they need clothing. So where's this extra money coming for all these cars, even if they're used cars, right?
Yeah, I mean, and if they extend the moratorium for 3 or 4 months, that even makes it worse. The longer they extend it, the worse things will be when they eliminate it. We'll be right back.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231. And the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. Today is Thursday, and we have Levity is Golden. And this is just the beginning of incentivizing employees to get the vaccine before, I believe, they turn it into mandatory, Dave. But what do you have for us?
Well, you know, Dollar General announced yesterday, I don't know if any of our listeners saw this, that it will be offering its frontline employees 4 hours worth of pay as an incentive to get the COVID vaccine. Now, that makes the discount retailer one of the first U.S. companies to incentivize its workers to get inoculated. The retailer, which has about 140,000 employees, said that it was providing hourly employees the one-time benefit to compensate for the time away from the store while they get the vaccine. Now, at first glance, Dollar General's decision appears to be generous, and this isn't meant to be a statement supporting or opposing this concept. It's up to each individual employer, and there are a lot of pros and cons at this point, particularly with a new vaccine that's been being distributed on an emergency basis. So at first glance, their decision appears to be generous. But according to Glassdoor, the average store associate at Dollar General makes about $9 an hour. Store managers make 12 to 13. So translate the company's incentive. It means a $36 bonus for its cashiers before taxes, and about $50 for store managers. Hardly an incentive in my eyes. I mean, how about paying their employees more to begin with? I mean, an employee making $9 an hour would equate to an annual wage of under $19,000 a year, assuming a 40-hour work week with two weeks of paid vacation. For a single mom or dad with two kids, that's $2,000 below the 2020 poverty line of $21,720 for a family of three. And to me, that's just plain unacceptable. I mean, even for a single person, $9 an hour would still qualify them for food stamps, Medicaid, and home heating aid in most states, depending, of course, on their total household income if they have a spouse. But here's my point, Melody. I mean, if Dollar General wants to show their employees they care about them, I mean, start paying them a living wage. You know, and I don't know where that is, just anywhere above $9 an hour. The company did add that it was working with distribution and transportation teams to make similar accommodations to those employees, and said it was providing their salaried employees additional store labor hours, too. Now, the discount store chain hasn't mandated vaccination for its workers, but it has encouraged them to do so. Counting, according to the CDC, people over 75 and, quote, essential workers are scheduled to receive the vaccine in the next phase called 1B after healthcare workers and nursing home residents receive theirs.
They lowered that to 65.
Today, you're right. You're right. You're right. They did. I did see that. I missed that. Dollar General was deemed an essential service during last year's lockdowns and became one of the few retailers to remain open for people to buy groceries and other daily supplies while others closed. So companies in the U.S., we know, have been shying away from discussing vaccine mandates. Good thing. And in any event, Melody, that is this week's Levity is Golden.
You know, I've got to go back to paying people, is it $9 an hour?
Yeah.
It's probably, they probably do not do full-time. I assume they're part-time, too, which makes it even worse.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
And, you know, when I'm looking at, when I'm listening to what you said, that people who are working that and they still qualify for food stamps and Medicaid and home heating aid, I mean, that's truly an indirect stimulus to these corporations.
Yeah, yeah, no skin off their backs.
No skin off their back. So again, not only do you have these corporations that aren't paying a living wage, you've got government supporting. But that's what government does. They don't help people. They depress people. You know, and aid these corporations. And the taxpayers get to pay for it. It is wrong. It is wrong. It is wrong. And it's just, and even as you say, if, I mean, like $21,000, the poverty line for a family of three. I mean, it really is sad. It truly is. I thought the poverty line was higher than that, but maybe for a family of four, I'm thinking of. But
a family of four is probably 26,000, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, up there around that level. And anyway, that's what I thought about that. It's just irritating. It is irritating. People should be outraged. People should be demanding more. And things will change. Somehow, some way, things will change. And unfortunately, changes are that we're going to face with inflation and jobs and wages is not going to be for the best or for the better. But, so for those of you who are fortunate enough to have savings and to have retirements and to have pensions, you better get it protected. And I hear more and more about 10%. Oh, you need 10% of gold in your... No. What's the point? You got a couple of million dollars. What's the point of 10%? How's that going to cover it? It's not going to cover it. It's not going to insure you. It's not going to insure your wealth. You have to have balance in a portfolio. That's what makes it work. That's what eliminates a lot of your risk, is if you're balanced. And that's what they try to tell you in your paper investments. Oh, you want to be balanced. Well, offset that risk of paper with gold and silver. I mean, it's just common sense. But to get out of those fiat dollars and get into some real money. And so I don't know, 800-375-4188 really is a no-brainer. And I think everybody knows that we're not going to come out of this year without some sort of something major coming down the pike. I think everybody knows that. Whether they protected for it or not remains to be seen, because, you know, Federal Reserve, government, multinational corporations continue to prop up the paper markets. Paper markets hit record highs. So, I know it wasn't too long ago, Dave, that we were talking about there was going to be a lot of investment that would be banned from China. But the United States have decided against banning American investment in Alibaba, probably since Jack Ma disappeared. I wonder if that has anything to do with it, Dave. Does anybody, have you heard where he's at?
Oh, I think he's somewhere in his own country.
Probably. He has a lot of land up here in the States, in in the Northeast, New England. He bought some huge, thousands of acres up there somewhere.
Well, maybe he's there then.
Could be. We're protecting him. And that's why the United States have decided to not ban American investment in Alibaba, removing for now a cloud of uncertainty over Asia's two biggest corporations. The Treasury Department has blocked a Pentagon effort to add the two internet firms on grounds they aided the military. Officials also debated blocking search leader Baidu, but dropped that plan too. That rhymes. Baidu.
Baidu, yeah.
Alibaba's Hong Kong stock, of course, climbed as much as 4%, while Tencent rose almost 5% on news of the reprieve. And the decisions removes uncertainty hanging over Chinese social media and gaming leader Tencent and Alibaba. The e-commerce titan founded by billionaire Jack Ma, that's now under intense regulatory scrutiny by Beijing regulators. So President Trump did sign an amended version of his executive order banning investment in Chinese military-linked companies. Imposing a ban on the pair would have marked the most dramatic escalation yet by the outgoing administration. And given the sheer size of the two firms and the difficulty unwinding positions, at more than $1 trillion, their combined market value is nearly twice the size of Spain's stock market, while the firms together account for about a tenth of the weighting for the MSCI's emerging markets benchmark. So the Defense Department will add more companies to the roster, and kind of interesting, Dave.
Well, it certainly ain't gonna mend the relationship between the world's two largest economies, Melody, which we know have clashed over everything lately, from trade to COVID to now Hong Kong. And of course, what's to come? Taiwan. Mm-hmm. Authorities in Washington have ramped up efforts to deprive Chinese companies of U.S. capital, and the final months, the current administration, that's only adding to economic tensions. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Zhao Lijian urged the U.S. to respect market economy principles and provide a fair, unbiased, and transparent business environment for foreign companies. Oh, man. The propaganda is strong with that one, Melody. You know, hasty measures have at times sown confusion in markets, not just here but around the world, and as well as prompted price swings, such as when the New York Stock Exchange reversed course twice on a decision to delist three Chinese telecom companies. The NYSE is now proceeding with its original delisting plan after Treasury Secretary Steve disagreed with its decision to give the firms a reprieve. Trump's order banned trading and affected securities starting just this past Monday. Now, if Biden leaves Trump's executive order in place, which is expected, U.S. investment firms and pension funds would be required to sell their holdings in companies linked to the Chinese military by November 11th. And if the U.S. determines additional companies have military ties in the future, American investors will be given 60 days from such determination to divest their holdings.
All very interesting. Here's something else.
All just get along.
Yeah, we all just get along. Well, you know, 8 in 10 Americans say America's falling apart.
What?
Yeah. 8 in 10, and they're both Republicans and Democrats saying America's falling apart. This question was just asked Tuesday and yesterday out of Axios, and it reflects the collision of crisis besetting the country. And, of course, that all includes, I mean, you all know what it is. One in five adults, 22% of Democrats and 19% of independents. You know, this is really bad. Say they aren't proud to be an American. 7% of Republicans and 17% of Americans as a whole. You know, it doesn't matter what's going on in this country and how we've been divided. We should always be proud of our country. We should always be proud to be an American, no matter what. And for those of who say they aren't proud, well, there's the door. Because they're probably part of the problem. Because America isn't meeting their definition of what America should be. And I think everyone should go back and begin to understand what America really is about and who we are. And take a look at what is dividing us. We're out of time, folks. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.